God Israel, Amen Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, The Mounds of Assyria by Erwin Gonchak, is one in a series of Eternal Light dramas based on great archaeological finds of modern times. It is based on Lost Worlds by Ann Terry White.
The powerful one of the four regions of the earth, who slaughters the mighty of the princes of the whole world, who has smashed all of his foes into the dust. Bow your heads before me, captive princes of my domain.
Woe to the city of Nineveh, bloody throughout, full of lies and booty. Woe to her kings.
Does anyone speak in my presence without permission? Chamberlain, did one of the captives speak just now?
I heard no one, my lord Sennacherib, king of the universe, king without rival.
Yes, then I shall proceed.
Know this, captive princess. It is I, Sennacherib, who has scattered, stormed, and conquered all lands from Jerusalem to Ararat, from Elam to Lydia. I personally slew with a sword. I received tribute from all kings. I marched straight away, unopposed. And I fashioned a stela with an image of myself as overlord and erected it near the sea in order to make my name lasting forever. My capital, Nineveh, is impregnable.
And it shall come to pass that all who look upon thee shall flee from thee and say, Nineveh is laid waste. Who will bemoan her? Whence shall I seek comforters for thee?
Does someone speak again? Who speaks? Chamberlain. Did you hear a voice?
Yes, my lord. There is a voice.
Go into the group. When the voice is heard again, cut off the head which speaks it.
My lord, what if I don't see the head which speaks it?
Cut off any head, Chamberlain. It is enough that we strike terror into the hearts of these vermin.
Look on my works, lowly captives, and tremble with despair.
During the autumn of 1839 and the winter of 1840, I, Austin Henry Layard, had been wandering through Asia Minor and Syria when I felt a great desire to penetrate to the regions beyond the Euphrates, to explore those vast blank lands once known as Assyria, Babylonia, and Chaldea. With these names are linked great nations and great cities dimly shadowed forth in history. Mighty ruins in the midst of deserts. The terrifying names of certain kings, such as Shalmaneser, Sennacherib, and Tiglath-Pileser, still hang over the region. Once the Hebrew prophets had cried loudly and bitterly against the wickedness of Nineveh, and the Hebrew records had noted the arrogance and cruelty of these empire builders who had oppressed them. Certainly, this was evidence of a sort. Yes, Nineveh had been. But where had it gone to? How was it possible for a vast civilization to have lived and died and left no trace behind?
The mounds, Mr. Layard? You ask about those great mounds of dirt across the river?
Yes, Arwood. This is your home. What do you people who live here think of them?
But we rarely think of them. The land has to be plowed. Who has time to think of mounds? All we know is that they have always been here. In my time, my father's time, and in his father's time, and so on.
Ruined cities slumber there. The conqueror's sword lies buried there. It must be so.
However, Mr. Layard, there is one story I can tell you about that particular mound.
Yes?
It is called Nimrod's Mound.
Nimrod of the Bible?
Yes, the grandson of Noah, who survived the great flood. Nimrod was a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. And from Nimrod, it is said, came the great warriors of the earth.
Yes, but why do they connect that shapeless mass with Nimrod?
Tradition says that figures carved in black stone still exist among the ruins. Some believe it is the grave of ancient warriors and their gods.
One day I'll explore that world. Bring it alive again.
Then, Mr. Layard, you will need many diggers and much courage.
Layard, it's been a pleasure having you on my staff in Constantinople. I'd be very sorry to lose you now.
Thank you, Ambassador Canning. It's just that I can think of nothing but those huge mounds I saw 5 years ago in Syria.
Yes, yes, yes. We've often heard you talk of them. But, Layard, do you really believe you're prepared to have a go at those mounds?
Sir, I've read everything about the East. I've traveled through the whole area on horseback.
Really?
I've learned the Arabic characters and a little of the Persian language.
Oh.
I can use a sextant and make topographical surveys. Even a medical friend has instructed me in the symptoms of the diseases of the East. Sir, I believe I am truly prepared to unlock the mysteries of those mounds.
Oh. Well, all right, Laird. I'll grant you a leave. Also, I'll give you some personal funds to tide you over for a while.
Thank you, Ambassador. I appreciate that most greatly.
Oh, think nothing of it, Laird. Always anxious to help a fellow countryman explore new territory. Well, good for the Empire, you know.
Yes, sir.
Well, good luck to you, young man.
Thank you, sir.
Not at all. Oh, one thing, Laird.
Ambassador?
Watch out for the natives there. I hear there's a slight unrest among the population.
To the £60 Ambassador Canning gave me, I immediately added my own small savings, and with the lightest heart in the world, with no servant and no baggage, except a pair of saddlebags, I set out to resurrect Nineveh. I was prepared to endure all sorts of hardships and to meet all sorts of obstacles. Still, I cautiously remembered what the ambassador had told me, and my Arab friend, Arwood, confirmed the rest.
This whole land is under Turkish rule, and the Pasha of Mosul is a tyrant of the worst order.
I'm sorry to hear that, Howard.
We are reduced to a state of terror and despair. This Pasha sets fire to villages just for the fun of watching. He plunders the townsfolk, and he chops heads right, and he chops heads left.
But can't something be done?
What? What can be done? If we complain, he will only seek revenge upon us. One cannot even go on the roads these days to complain. The ferocious Bedouins are so angry at the Pasha for robbing them, they get back at anyone coming their way.
Yes, I almost ran into them myself.
I'm afraid, Mr. Layard, that it does not look like this is the right time for the digging.
No, I can't turn back now. It's now or never. There in the desert sit those mysterious mounds, just waiting for me.
But if the Pasha hears, there will be trouble.
Then I shall not reveal my plans about excavating for the time being. I'll simply procure guns and spears, and if anyone asks, I shall say I'm going to hunt boars in a neighboring village, and then, quietly, set off down the Tigris River.
With the Pasha following you.
Don't worry, Arwood. Can you have some workmen with you tomorrow morning at the Mound of Nimrod?
We will be there, Mr. Layard. But now I do not know who to fear more, the wild Bedouins, the Pasha, or the giants of the mound.
Certainly I was in a fever to begin. I spent the whole night seeing visions of Assyria, which until recently had appeared only as a long, menacing shadow in the pages of 2 centuries of biblical history, revealing itself in palaces underground, gigantic monsters, sculptured figures, endless inscriptions. Now, my long-cherished hopes were to be either realized or dashed forever. Such was my good fortune that a few hours' work revealed the upper edges of several adjoining slabs. It was evident that this was the wall of a chamber. And then began the first of a long procession of bas-relief sculptures of battle scenes, which was to become so familiar to me, the richly caparisoned horses, the fully armed warriors, and under the horses' feet, the conquered, wounded by the arrows of the Assyrian conqueror. After one day's work with 6 men, we had disclosed the whereabouts of 2 palaces. However, on the following morning, trouble began.
Aha, Mr. Laird. Now I finally see why you are digging.
What do you mean, Albert?
There in your hand. That explains it.
You mean these ivory figures we've just uncovered?
Mr. Laird, I refer to those bits of gold leaf on the statues.
You think I came halfway around the earth to dig for gold?
Voila! The English know that which is hid from the true believer. Here is gold, sure enough, and please God, we shall find it all in a few days. Only one word of caution, Mr. Layard.
Yes, Albert.
Do not say anything about it to those workmen, for they are donkeys and cannot hold their tongues. The matter will come to the ears of the Pasha.
Mr. Layard, please come in. Please sit down. Be comfortable. It is too bad that it is so hot in these climes.
Thank you, Pasha. I came about the diggings.
Ah, yes, Mr. Layard, the diggings. I would like to do everything to help you, Mr. Layard. I like the English. I admire their enterprise, the perspicacity. And I am anxious to be honored by their friendship. Today, tomorrow, my whole life long until Allah calls me away.
Fine. Fine. So why did you order the diggings to be halted?
1,000 apologies. But my good friend, so it must be.
But why, Your Excellency? I feel that I am on the verge of astounding finds that will open new vistas into biblical history, world history, the uncovering of a lost civilization.
Yes, Mr. Layard, a golden one, I am sure. But the order is for your protection.
My protection?
Certainly. Haven't you looked closely at the mound?
Oh, yes, of course, I'm there all day long.
Then you should have noticed that it has been used as a Muslim burial ground. Is forbidden by law to disturb a tomb.
But, Your Excellency, I haven't seen any burial stones.
Look a little more closely when you get back. The natives would be furious if they thought you were disturbing their tombs. They might, Mr. Layard, cut off your head. And I wouldn't want this to happen to you, the dearest and most intimate friend.
Howard, I just can't believe it. The mound is covered with gravestones.
Yes, Mr. Layard. It has suddenly become a graveyard of my people.
Suddenly?
Of course. The Pasha has heard of the gold, and his mouth waters with greed. One of the donkeys must have talked.
But the gravestones?
The captain, the Pasha's command, and his troops have been spending 2 nights bringing gravestones from distant villages and making graves on the mound.
Why?
The scoundrel.
They have destroyed more real tombs of the true believers in making sham ones than you could have defiled between the Zab and the Salamia. They say they have killed their horses and themselves in carrying those accursed stones.
Is there no way of getting at this petty tyrant?
Pray, Mr. Layard, that one day Allah will grow weary of the Pasha and deliver him a punishing blow.
So you see, Mr. Layard, I have been, how do the English say it, clapped into jail.
Yes, I heard the rumor, but I couldn't believe it, Your Excellency, so I came to see for myself.
Yes, my government have recalled me, in chains, no less. It is deeply humiliating for a person of my position.
I can well understand that.
To put me, the great Pasha, in a dilapidated cell. Even the roof leaks.
You have my deepest sympathies.
Alas, thus it is with God's creatures. Yesterday, all those dogs were kissing my feet. Today, everyone and everything fall upon me. Even the rain.
With the Pasha removed, I could breathe easily again and continue the diggings at Nimrod's mound. Still, I couldn't help speculating on the relationship of the sudden fall of the Pasha and the equally sudden fall of the Assyrians centuries before. Certainly both tyrants were made of the same clay, one on a petty scale, the other on a world scale. But before I could go any further, my ruminations were disturbed by a shout.
Hasten, Mr. Layard! Hasten to the diggers! They have found Nimrod himself!
What do you mean, Howard?
Allah, it is wonderful, but it is true. We have seen him with our eyes. There is no God but God. Do you see, Mr. Layard, arising from the earth, the gigantic head of a winged lion?
A colossal winged statue. Magnificent. Magnificent. In admirable preservation. A god of the Assyrians. Through the portals which he guarded, kings, priests, and warriors had borne sacrifices to their altars.
Aye. Mr. Layard, look behind you. The whole village has come to see. There is a great fear among the people.
This is not the work of man's hands, but of those infidel giants of whom the prophet, peace be with him, has said that they were higher than the tallest date tree.
This is one of the idols which Noah, peace be with him, cursed before the flood. But we laugh at them now.
No, we must destroy it before the wrath of Allah descends on us all.
Howard, we must stop them. Our work will be ruined.
Villagers, listen to me. This is a time for rejoicing. We must sing and laugh. For look, these idols have crumbled into the ground. It is our shovels that have dug up their bones thousands of years later. They had no power to restore themselves to life.
Yes, my friends. Albert is right. Do not have any fear. The gods of the ancient Assyrians are dead. Their evil message could not save the Assyrians from complete and utter destruction. This civilization has been dead for many centuries. They and their gods can do the world no more harm.
Come, my countrymen. Let us sing and dance and rejoice. Allah has triumphed.
The colossal statue was only the first of many. As the excavation progressed, no fewer than 13 pairs of winged lions and bulls came forth from the site, the palace of Ashurnasirpal in the ancient city of Kala. I contemplated for hours these mysterious emblems and mused over their intent and import. Memories, enshrined only in the Bible, were now being restored to their proper place in ancient history. Then, from Nimrod's mound, the diggers and I moved to another, which turned out to be nothing less than Nineveh itself, the great Assyrian capital. And there we encountered the infamous Sennacherib, whose name had struck terrors into the hearts of all who heard it many, many hundreds of years ago.
I am Sennacherib, the great king, the mighty king, king of the universe, king of Assyria, king of the four quarters of the earth. Chamberlain, call forth my artists.
Yes, my lord.
All artists report to King Sennacherib, the great king, the mighty king. All artists report to King Sennacherib, the great king, the mighty king.
The artists are here, my lord.
Artists, inscribe pictures on the palace walls of my latest deeds. How my white and mighty warriors scaled walls, gave battle, impaled inhabitants, carried away captains and spoil. How I besieged, I conquered, I despoiled, I burned with fire. How with corpses I spanned the Orontes before there was a breach. How I brought humankind in submission to my feet.
Yes, my lord, in Sennacherib, the great king, the mighty king.
This is the rejoicing city that dwelt carelessly, that said in her heart, I am, and there is none beside me.
Chamberlain.
But Nineveh ignores the Lord and has no compassion for man.
Chamberlain.
She will become a desolation, a place for beasts to lie down.
Chamberlain, I hear that voice again.
Yes, my lord.
Go among the artists. And when the voice speaks again, chop off the head from where it comes. Then surely it will cease at last. Great fear grips me. Quickly, Chamberlain, off with the heads. Any head will do.
Mr. Layard, we are sad that you are leaving us now.
I'm sad also, Olive. But the Foreign Office of my government has called me back into service, and it's there where my future now lies.
If Allah is as good to you there as he was here, then I'm sure you will become an important minister of your country.
Well, thank you, Olive. You know, I will always remember the magnificent job you and your people have done. If not for your help, the world would have known next to nothing about the Assyrian Empire. Now, every schoolboy shall know of this nation, the ferocious warriors and tyrants that they begot, the gods of fury they worship.
And it will help these little boys when they study it?
Well, I truly hope it will. Perhaps they and their elders will learn that nations that rule by terror must finally die in the same way. That in desperation, captive peoples can gain the courage to smite down their cruel masters. And when this happened, the mighty military empire of the Assyrians was wiped off the face of the earth. Tyrants cannot long survive. In one way or another, they are destroyed.
Mr. Layard, let us hope that even our erstwhile Pasha has learned this lesson that now all schoolboys will know.
So, on the 28th of April, 1851, after more than 5 years of digging in the mounds of Assyria, and with the knowledge that crate loads of strange and mysterious statues, pictures, and clay tablets from the dim past were safely on their way to the British Museum in London, I said goodbye to my faithful Arab friends and turned from the ruins of Nineveh, still hearing in the distance that awesome echo from the desert.
I am Sennacherib, king of the universe, king of the four quarters of the earth, forever and forever.
One last look back. The voice was silent, and all that remained were the funeral mounds of a vanished despotism. If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Harry M. Orlinsky, Professor of Bible at the New York School of Hebrew, Union College, Jewish Institute of Religion, and author of Ancient Israel, an account of the society that produced the Bible. Dr. Orlinsky.
It is interesting and instructive that hardly a single power of the ancient Near East, and Assyria especially, would have been known to the world, even to the meager extent that they were, had it not been for mention of them in the annals of ancient Israel, preserved in the Hebrew Bible. Unluckily for the foreign nations, their contact with biblical Israel was occasioned far more often than not by their need for economic expansion and exploitation and military conquest. Israel's geographical location, constituting the land bridge between Western Asia and Egypt, made her so frequently target number one. And so the foreign nations are invariably mentioned in an unfavorable manner. They are regularly denounced by the biblical prophets and historians as ruthless, wicked, boastful, pitiless. Our picture of the Babylonians and the Assyrians, of the Hittites and the Arameans, of the Moabites and the Edomites, as drawn from the Bible alone, is scarcely an attractive one. But with the discovery and excavation of Assyrian mounds and Sumerian and Babylonian mounds and the hundreds of ancient man-made mounds throughout the vast region between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers in Western Asia and the Nile River in Egypt, it is now possible to reconstruct a more balanced picture of several national societies of the ancient world of the Bible, to understand them in proper perspective. As a result of this, it has become possible to appreciate even more the full character of biblical Israel in its historical setting and development among the other nations, both the great and the not so great. And so two significant blessings have come upon the modern student of the Bible and of the ancient Near East. Firstly, the Bible as an historical document has grown even greater in reliability and importance. And secondly, the history and character of ancient Israel's neighbors may be comprehended in much fuller perspective. This can but delight the heart of everyone interested in the course of human history.
Thank you, Dr. Orlinsky. Eternal Light Drama today, The Mounds of Assyria, written by Erwin Gonchak, was one program in a series of programs based on great archaeological finds. It was based on Lost Worlds by Anne Terry White, published by Random House Incorporated. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Ralph Bell, Guy Repp, Richard Hamilton, Eugene Francis, Burford Hampton, James Stevens, and Mercer McLeod. Ivor Francis played Layard. This is Vic Robey. Our program was directed by Daniel Sutter. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.